Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So if you're only going to feed your account for 25 years, think about that. If it's like a seesaw, how is it supposed to feed you for 40? That's not a really fair proportion. Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Hitch. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP. And I am here today with my guest, June. Hi, June.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, will you give us the rundown on yourself, age, location, job, income, all that?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm 39. I live in Houston, and I'm a freelance self-employed writer and editor, and my husband is a engineer.
Very good. So self-employed is always interesting, right? Because it's hard. You don't have like a set salary. So what is your approximate or targeted income?
So I started full-time freelancing in 2018 after doing it as a side hustle for like 7 years. And my goal was always just that elusive six-figure freelance number, really for no tangible reason. It's just like, oh, that's what, you know.
Goal. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I hit that in 2022. I made $131,026. Okay. Last year, I made $111,651. It actually dropped because I was like outsourcing quite a bit. Like I was taking on more work than I could do and then outsourcing some of it for a lower price. But that just wasn't, I don't think the ROI was there for me. So I'd rather just keep 100% of the money, you know, bring home more, but like make less.
Yep. That makes total sense. And so what are you targeting? You think you'll be about the same for this year for 2024?
Probably. I think so. Unless like a big contract pops up or comes through. Okay. I'm always, you know, looking to see what's out there. So things do just like pop up. But in general, that seems to be like where I land at.
Okay. And I'm just curious because I don't know, like, so how do you get your contracts? Is there like a site you go to and like bid on, or do people, do you have relationships and they send you work?
At this point, well, so it's been 5 years of the full time. So at this point, it is a lot of word of mouth, or it's like, I'll work with someone. And then like, say I work with you to do copy or redesign your website or whatever, then you go to another company. You start working for a company and then they need a writer and you're like, oh. And so I've actually had a lot of people where I've worked with them and then they go to like multiple other companies, people from the same company. And so then I end up like having contracts with all these different companies. So that's been really nice. I mean, in the beginning, it was a lot of just going on these different job boards and commenting, like trying to be the first person to comment and reach out and connect. But then as you develop a portfolio, at this point, I have bylines in recognizable publications. Yep. And so now when I apply, I get a lot more response than I used to.
So it's probably really good that you did this as a side hustle for a while to like build your network, get your portfolio together. It makes it easier at this point.
Yeah, a lot easier. Because I mean, in the beginning, I was doing it for very low pay or sometimes free. I would just reach out and say like, could I help you, you know, write content and just to get the byline to start the portfolio. Yeah.
Wow. So it definitely a grind to get to this point.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, and you're married. So you're married filing joints. And then what does your husband bring in?
We actually file separately. We just got married in November. And I looked it up and like, based on what we both make, it didn't seem like an advantage.
Okay.
So I just was like, I'd rather not.
Okay. So you're like doing married filing separate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You surprised me with that one. I think so. What did you say his income was?
120. Well, let me see. Okay. 118. So when I looked it up, it was like
comparable.
Yeah.
I think where it like would affect you the most, give or take, would be modified adjusted gross income phase out contributions for Roth IRAs, if you're married filing separate, is quite low. Married filing separate definitely makes sense in certain instances, like student loan payments. A lot of people do married filing separate to be on income-based student loan. Yeah, so it just depends, but I think it'll just depend on your situation. So let's get more into your situation from there. But okay, mark it
Okay.
down, married filing separate. So how are we doing with like savings and debt and all that jazz? Or do you want to do expenses first?
Whatever
Let's
works for you.
do expenses first.
Okay. I think my only debt, he owns the house, but I mean, obviously, so we our money is together. So we pull our money and then I manage the money.
Okay, so you pull your money. Okay.
Yeah,
And
so I mean,
he owns the house, so you're not on the house. You're
no,
not on the
he
mortgage,
owned the
not on
house when
the.
we met.
Okay. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
so we
fine.
haven't changed that.
Okay.
So my only true debt is my loan, my student loans.
Okay.
I have 6700 left and I pay 148 a month.
That's not bad. 6,700 left. Okay.
No, it's not bad. And then I went to grad school and everything was fully paid for, but I took out loans to like party. Very bad decision. I do not recommend. I didn't understand anything about debt. So, yeah,
Like,
I was
I
like, you get
need
it.
beer money. Like, please send
Yeah,
me
I was like
that. Yeah.
traveling and I was just like, this is my like, you know, the government's like helping me. It's like, no, you have to pay all that back. Yeah, let me see. Okay, so you want me to go through my expenses?
Yes. And so we're from a filing standpoint, we're separate, but you're pooling money. And then from an expense standpoint, how are we doing expenses?
Expenses are together.
Okay,
Is that
perfect.
okay?
Yeah, that's
Okay.
totally fine. Everyone does it their own way. So however you do it is fine.
So, one thing that I do want to get your opinion on is that every month I'm putting $1,200 into a SEP.
Okay.
And for me, and so I'm kind of like, I mean, we'll go into all of our other accounts, but I'm like, is this too much? It's really just me trying to figure out if. Like I feel like I might be doing too much now. So yeah, so that is an expense, the
Okay, so
1200.
1200. And is that your for I really love when someone is doing their retirement as the first expense. Is that how you do
I mean, it's just at the end of the month. So me, when I manage like my, you know, our money, the last day, business day of the month, I just like figure out how much I made. I pay 25% to taxes. I donate some money and then I move the
it?
money to retirement and I do that like last day of every month.
Perfect. Okay, good.
Yeah. So there's
Also
that.
good that you set aside the 25% for taxes, because that's the hard part
Yeah.
when you're self-employed, is you're responsible for your taxes, and your FICA, right? The Social Security and Medicare as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
know people forget about that number, and that's a big number.
Yeah, because you it's like if you feel like you made so much money, but it's like no, you have to
Yes.
pay.
Yeah, we're giving up a lot of it.
Yeah. So then I have, let's see, I have gym costs. I have them at 100, which it varies, but right now that's what we're
Okay.
spending. Our car insurance, I have at 275.
Okay.
Our mortgage is 1950. Electricity, 130. Water, 50. Internet, 100. Groceries, 600. Gas, 200. There's a lot. Eating out, I have 400. And then our house gas bill, I have 30. Spotify, 17. Sirius, $9. Intuit, which is my tax software, $21 a month. Tithing and donations, 300. Cat food, well, cats, 150. We have two cats,
150 cats. Okay.
$150 a month. Hair, because we both have expensive hairstylists. I put 200 a month. Fun money, which is just random, 200. Phones, $100. And then my loan payment I told you about, which is
Yeah.
148. And then I also have a car wash once a month, $50, and then a massage, which is 150. So all that comes out to like 6400. So I try to aim to start each month with 6500. Whatever's like extra, if I have 8000, I just move the extra to savings.
Perfect. Okay. And then your husband puts in money into this account too.
His paycheck gets deposited. So he gets somewhere between $2,300 to $3,000 every 2 weeks because he works overtime and travels sometimes. Okay. But like if he doesn't do any traveling or do anything, it's around like low 2,000s.
Okay. And that's so then $4,000 for the month.
Yeah, as like minimum, but a lot of times it's more than that.
Okay.
He has child support obligations, so that takes like a big chunk out of it. So that's why it doesn't really add up to what he makes.
And then what's, do you know what the child support obligation is?
Yeah, it's been like 2,000. Okay. It's going to get reduced to 1,700 like this month.
Okay. Wow. So 2,000. So basically if he didn't travel for work and he brought in around 4,000 for the month, he not lost, but he had an obligation for 2,000. So he netted 2,000 after his
it gets pulled before we even see the money. So like, it doesn't baseline for us. Like he'll always have around 4,000.
Okay. So take home would be 6 and then you're netting 4. Got it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes more sense given his income level. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then is he also contributing to retirement through work?
Yeah. So he has like a couple accounts. He has a 401k through work. He does a 6% contribution pre-tax and they match 50 cents on the dollar up to 6%.
Okay.
And he also has 2 pensions from previous jobs.
Perfect. We love a pension. Don't hear that word that often.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So he's doing his 401k and he has 2 pensions from previous jobs. And then you're mm-hmm. doing your SEP IRA.
I have a SEP and then I have a high yield savings and I have Coinbase, which is like crypto.
Okay. And he doesn't have any debt, but he does have child support. And child support is for how many more years, do you know?
10.
Okay, but it'll be at the 1700 number now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but 10 more years. Okay, and then let's start with your account. So how much do you have in the SEP IRA?
Well, so combined, I have SEP, traditional IRA, and Roth.
And it's all together. It's like all in the same. Probably had like a 401k rate with your previous. Yeah. Okay.
I have $105,214 total. Yeah. It's all on the same server. Yeah.
Perfect. And then the Roth you're not contributing to, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay. And you're just doing the SEP and you're doing $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you calculate your own SEP contribution or?
I mean, I think the max, I forgot what the max is, but I'm like definitely way under the max.
Yeah. That
I
can you're way contribute. Under the max.
Yeah. But I kind of was just trying to be like, I don't know. I've kind of just tried to be like, oh, I need to be doing enough. But then when I get on I use LVEST, and when I get on LVEST, they're like, you're projected to have this much money, and it's a lot more than I feel like I need. So then I'm like, too much?
No, I don't know that I've ever told anyone they're saving too much because I've never met anybody who retired and was like, dude, I have too much money. It's never been anything anyone said to me before, and I've met with thousands of people.
It's just like we have goals that we could use, you know, because we do have the obligation that, yes. I'm like, we could use that money now.
So my question is, do you know what they're using for the projection, like the percentage return? Because sometimes I think it depends. So basically what I would do with that projection is I would look at like a high projection, a middle projection, and a low projection, you know? So you could see like worst case scenario, if the account's only earning compounding interest of like 5 or 6%, like what is my number?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could use like 7 is a middle of the road. So maybe do 5, 7, and 9. And then you could see what those 3 projections.
It looks like they use 6.2 to 9.8%.
Okay. So 9.8, I think would be a high number for projection.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I would err on the side of the lower one so that you're not, and that will give you like a more realistic idea, I believe, of like where you could end up if you're using a lower one.
Yeah.
But I think that if you think about what you're making versus the percentage you're saving, right? So usually the baseline is you want to be saving at least 10%. A better number is closer to 20% of your income. I mean, you have a great gig, right? You're self-employed, so you could always continue to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would think you could write from anywhere. I could be wrong, but like,
yeah,
you could scale it down if you wanted to retire and say, I'm only going to write
Right.
Like so many contracts or whatever, I would think.
Yeah.
Okay. So, because like sometimes, like with lawyers, for instance, they're not as hung up on the number because they're like, well, maybe I'll still pick up some legal work 1 or 2 days a week. Right. And it's not,
yeah,
I'll just do some wills or, you know, do some trust agreements or whatever, or outsource myself a little bit 1 or 2 days a week, and I can still make X and still live my life.
Right.
But I don't think with the contribution you're making to this stuff, I don't think you're over contributing given what the income is and the percentage you're putting towards retirement. I think that that's a good number.
Okay.
And then, but let's go through everything else. Like how much do you have in the high yield savings?
$118,226.
So it's good. It's high yield because that's a good, it's a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what do you have in crypto?
I only have 806. I also have a Fundrise account, which is like real estate, and it's 1533. I forgot about that one.
Okay. 1533.
So that's kind of like my stuff. The savings is ours. We both contribute to that.
Okay. So I have to ask about the house. Like how are we doing the house?
I mean, cause our money's pooled. Like we both just like pay for things.
But you have no ownership on it.
I can't remember like if we even looked into what it would be to add someone in our state to your mortgage. So we just bought some software to do our wills. So maybe that's something we could do when we do that.
Like, yeah, so you'd want to make sure like if anything happened to him that would go to you, right?
Yeah.
But and then also like more importantly, like if God forbid you got divorced, you're paying into a mortgage.
Yeah.
And you have no rights to the house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll just have him add me to the title when we do the will stuff. Cause yeah, I think everything legally that you own goes to your spouse in Texas. Right, and like I'm on all his.
It would go through probate. And that means that like he has children. And so, yes, in theory, but once it goes to probate, it's an open court proceeding and that can get tied up. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely think you need to do, I think you need to do for sure the will, healthcare proxy, power of attorney, those sort of basic documents you're going to want in place. I would just put it in the back of your head. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is like, I just talked to a woman and it was kind of the opposite situation. So she bought the house with a down payment and he put a little bit towards the mortgage. It wasn't 50-50 like you're doing. But she put his name on everything. And so now she's buying him out of the house that he really never paid for.
Yeah. You told me, you didn't tell me. I heard about that.
You heard
like
about
he
that
left one. Her. Yeah. Like he left her and then now she has to like buy him out.
She's buying him out of a house he never bought into.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure you're protected on the flip side. Like obviously you hope you never get divorced. Right. But you're more statistically likely to get divorced than die right now. Right? Like in the next 10 to 20 years. So you still want to do the estate planning component because that's really important. You have assets, you're together, you're a legal entity now that you're married. But I would also cover yourself from the standpoint of, let's just play this out. 15 years from now, you paid for half the mortgage, right? And
yeah,
something happens with the marriage and your name has never been added. What you're now homeless. There's a fair way to do it. And I'm not a lawyer, but that to me would be worth getting an opinion on now that you're legally married and you're contributing to 50% of the mortgage of like, how do I protect myself? Because the thing with the divorce is only one person needs to want the divorce. That's the tricky part, right? Like in order to get married, you both have to sign for it. But if someone decides to leave the relationship, you can't like go drag them back, like physically make them come back to the, that's the scary part about a divorce. This is just one person needs to want it.
Okay. Yeah. I'll look into that when we do that. Cause that's on my list for next week.
Okay. Perfect. But I think you're doing a good job on the SEP. I would say that like where your income is for what you're contributing, that's a good amount. Cause you're doing about 14,000, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
14 to 15,000. And then you're doing a great job with the high yield savings. You have quite a bit of money.
Yeah, we are going to do, we're about to embark on a remodel. So I think a lot of that money is going to go to the remodel. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then now you're in putting money into the house and stuff. I think it's a very fair conversation to say, like, how am I protected with the contributions I'm making into the house, right? Because that's joint monies. And also, I don't know your state. This is why, like, we'd have to defer to an attorney because, like, some states are community property. It's not my, this is not my wheelhouse. I'm not an attorney. So that was going to be next issue. What are your financial goals? So one is the remodel, which it sounds like you've saved for already.
Yeah, we were going to do a remodel. The contractor is drafting up design plans. We're supposed to meet on Monday. So we've already contracted with him and paid a deposit. And we're going to add a primary suite and a pool and a hot tub.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. It's so hot here in the summer. So I'm like, and then really that's it. I think, because I mean, we were talking about moving, but real estate prices are just so wild right now. And he has a really good interest rate because he bought during the pandemic. So I think we'll remodel. And then, but beyond that, it's, we like to travel and we just like to kind of maintain our lifestyle. And I definitely want to be like, okay, later in life. But I'd say so, that's really it.
How long did it take you to save up the 118? Because that's a substantial amount of money.
Well, it was kind of half and half. So like I came in pretty much. So during the pandemic, I was like on the brink of becoming a digital nomad. And so I had gone to my parents' house, which was empty. They lived in Belgium and they had like a house. They have a house in Texas. They live there now, but they weren't there. And so I was like, I'm going to put all my stuff here and then I'm going to travel. And then the pandemic started. So I was like grounded at their house for 2 years. So I had no bills. And
it's
so
amazing.
Yeah. And I had just gotten laid off. And so I ended up getting all those unemployment boosters. Yep. So I'm save thousands of dollars that year, just like do like being stuck at home. I was like, whoa, like that was the first time that I really had a lot in savings. And then from there, it's like, it just kept going. Like I just started, like I got a big contract the next year and I still didn't have any bills. And so then I was like saving. And so when it just kept snowballing. Yeah. And my parents have helped me. Their thing was like, they don't want to leave a big inheritance. They wanted to help their children like now. And so in the past like few years, they've helped with a lot of things. And so that kind of made it to where I was like saving more than maybe I could have otherwise. And then when I met him, he owned three houses and he sold two of them. And so he used that money to pay off any debts that he had. He's been embroiled in a lot of custody battles and stuff like that. And so he has lawyer expenses. And so whatever he had left over, he put in the savings. And so it kind of just like was a lot coming from both sides. Yeah.
It's amazing. And I'm assuming most of that, how much are you planning? Like, what's the plan, like the price approximately? Or you don't have
he hasn't given us that yet. Yeah. I kind of imagine it's going to be a, like most of it because pools are really expensive. And the original price he gave us for like what we wanted, it was something else we wanted to do, but it was like more, it was like 150 or 160. And so we kind of were like, oh, we don't want to touch like the existing structure. Let's just focus on the addition. But I still think it's going to probably be
most of it. Yeah. So then you'll probably want to like get that back up to have an emergency fund, like at least keep some emergency fund. But just to play out with not adding, because you know I like to do this on the podcast, if like if you are earning 7.2% compounding interest, which is like that middle of the road number we were talking about, like I think you do 4 to 5 for a low case, and then some people go up higher to do a high case. But if you took 105 and just you're 39, then at 49 it would be 210. At 59 it would be 420. And then at 69, it would be 840, right?
Well, we've got his, will we account for his retirement?
Yeah, we can.
Too?
Yeah, we can add his in. I just did yours. And how much does he? So, but like, I think it would be good if we got you up over, and you will because you're adding, but that's why I don't think it's too much, right? Because the way to like estimate it is you, and this is like just a textbook. So some people will debate whether this right or wrong. It's just hard to know what's going to happen in 30 years. So if we just give an estimate, but the textbook is like, you would pull 4% off of that number, right? So if you get to 1 million, that means you're pulling 40,000 off plus what you would get for Social Security.
Okay.
I'm a firm believer you would still have that. I do think the number more realistic to collect from Social Security will be 70, not 62, not 65, but 70. Once again, we don't know. There's going to be a lot of changes over the years. But then let's say your Social Security number was like somewhere around 40,000. Then that's 80,000 you have coming in, right? So that's why I think what you're saving is accurate, because I think you should try and get up over that $1 million threshold. And you probably will with where you are, but depends on where the returns happen to be, right? That's the variable we don't know.
Right.
So I don't think you're over-saving for retirement. And we're just playing out for where you'd
be. So you think I'm under-saving, or do you feel like this is a good place?
I think you're at a good place. I think that I am a very big believer that we can't just do retirement, right? Like, as you said, like, you want to enjoy yourself now as well, right? Because tomorrow isn't promised. So I'm in the camp of let's make sure we're living for today, but we're also protecting the future. That so when you get there, it's still comfortable, but that you enjoyed yourself. That's not over sacrificing in the near term. So I think the goal would be replace some of the money with the emergency fund once the renovation is done. And having done projects on homes before, and I hope no one has the luck that I've had with homes. If you've listened to the podcasts, I've had some really terrible experiences with real estate. Usually it's a little longer, a little more than they say, because you never know what you're going to run into. I think the next step would be to like build that back up, the high yield savings account. So you have a solid emergency fund, and then it's on to the next goal, right? Like what?
Yeah.
Then at that point you like fixed up your residence to have it be the oasis that you want it to be. Right. Which is great.
Right.
And then you get your emergency fund back up. And then the next thing you save for, if that's more travel, then that's the next thing you're saving for. But I think from a retirement standpoint, I would just continue trucking on where you are. I think that's a good amount, but I wouldn't reduce it, I guess.
Okay, cool.
And then what does your husband have saved up?
He has in his 401k, he has $307,315. In his pensions, he's got $8,237 and $16,600. And yeah.
And how old is your husband?
36.
So he has really another. So he has closer to 400, 450. Perfect. Okay, so we'll just play his out. So 36, 46, 56. We'll just say 66 to keep it even. So 400, 800, 1.6, 3.2. So that's a good number. Because then if you're taking... Well, because then you're getting, you would be able to pull like 120,000 off of that, right?
Right.
And that's like with not contributing anything else. So I think, yeah, I would keep yours up to where it is. I wouldn't reduce it. And then he'll have household income will be good, but you also want to make sure you're protecting yourself as well. Yeah, I think you're in a good spot. I think it would just be once the renovation is done is like getting the emergency fund back up. And then from that point, all the extra cash is whatever you want to do with it.
Okay. Okay, cool. That just sounds like a lot of money. Like if he like in retirement, right? Like, I don't know. Like if he's doing 120 plus Social Security plus like I'm doing 80 plus Social Security, like what are we doing?
But you could also, so remember, like if you get to age 56 and you're 59, right? And you say, we have enough. You just retire earlier.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from whole foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/future-rich. That's drinkag1.com/future-rich. Check it out.
What is enough? Like, how do you know? Are you like, when do you know it's enough?
That's a great question. That is a hard answer. I had on Manisha Thakur, I think I'm saying her last name right, and she talks about like, what is enough? it's different for everybody, and I think it's a really interesting topic that's not talked about enough. I think that you guys have set yourself up to be in a great position, right? You have good income, low mortgage rate, cash flush, solid retirement accounts. So like, yeah, what is enough? And like, everyone's enough is something different. Like you mentioned your husband has to fly. Like maybe he decides once he gets to a certain number in retirement, and I don't know, he doesn't want to fly anymore. So he takes a job where he's making a little bit less. He can cover his child support, or he only has 5 years left, and he doesn't want to be on flights anymore, because that's a real thing, right? Flying around is not,
yeah.
People think it's fun until it's like, try it. See if you enjoy it. You see the inside of an airplane in a conference room, usually. You're not like out living life, you know?
Yeah, right.
So maybe you guys say in your late 40s, like, we feel like we're really comfortable. We're going to tone down our careers and maybe work less hours or part-time or take different gigs, because the market has done really well. We're very comfortable with where we are. We don't have any, you know, plans of buying a second home, right? Like, everyone's goals are so different, right? Like, and I read this other report of two people living on the same income, and one couple was struggling to make ends meet because of the lifestyle they were living, and the other couple who was like living super comfortably on the same income, but couple A wanted a second home. Couple B was perfectly fine taking their vacation twice a year, which was like a more reasonably cost vacation, right? Couple A wanted a golf membership, wanted fancier cars, right? So that's where it's hard to say what's enough, because it depends on your lifestyle. Like,
yeah,
I live a very low cost lifestyle and I'm very happy. I would agree with you. Like, I want to add a couple more things to our house, but like, I don't really, we'll take a couple vacations to go internationally because I like to see other cultures, but like, for our anniversary, we just stayed home.
Is there like an equation that you can use? Like, if you know how much you want to be able to pull a year, though, is there like,
I think you would use the 4% and say, okay, I think we can live on this. You have to equate for, and there's software that we use in the industry to do this, but you would need to equate for cost of living adjustments, right? So like, what it costs today is not what it's going to cost in 30 years. So you can inflate that number. So there's softwares where you inflate it, but if you use a ballpark of, I think, pulling 4% a year, and then you would need to inflate your expenses, right? Because we don't know what your expenses are going to be. There's inflation. Inflation is averaged historically. Obviously, we've had a really big inflation over the last couple of years, but prior to that, like if we excluded the last 2 years, prior to that, inflation had averaged like between 3 and 4% since 1975.
Here's what is the trick. 4% like based on, like, how do you pull, like, what does that actually mean? Like,
yeah, that's a great question. So it's saying that like, you would assume your account's earning at least 4, meaning that you're not pulling from principal initially, right? Because of life expectancy. So if you're pulling from principal and we have a bad year, that means your account went down and you pulled. So now it went down more, because remember, if your account goes down, like in a bad year, 20% to get to even, not to make profit, but just to get back to where you started, you have to go up 40%. That's a big number. Now, if you're pulling from it, let's say you took 5% out that year. Now you went down 25, right? The market went down 20. You pulled 5% out. So now you need to go up 50 to get to even. And so that's where it can kind of spiral. And that's where you heard these horror stories of people who retired in 2008 and it really didn't go well because we had such a bad year. So that's why the 4%, I still like it, because some people are like, well, you can take more. I'm like, you could, but I'd rather be conservative, right? Because
so what
do
you, when you retire, like, sorry if this is a dumb question, but like, do you, so say I have this like SEP and then I'm old enough and I retire, do I pull everything out of that SEP at that point and put it in like a high yield account, or it like stays in that?
Generally not. So if we think about it, right, time mitigates risk, right? So the more time you have, like when we talk about this scenario, if the account goes down 20%, as long as you have time for it to recover, it will come back, statistically speaking. We can't predict the future, but historically it would have come back if you left it alone for 2 years. So time mitigates risk. So typically what we do when we're planning out someone's retirement is we say, what do you need for the next 2 to 3 years? That's a market cycle. So we take that money and we make that money more conservative because we know we have to spend it. And then the rest of the money can be more aggressive. So when you see these charts of like, this is your pie, really, the way I like to think about it is it's a bunch of little pies put together, right? Your short-term pie, which is your near-term money. If it's 1 to 3 years out, shouldn't be as risky as your money that's 10 plus years out, right? Because it doesn't matter if
so
the
that's
10
money
plus
that you
year
would
money.
pull. Is that money
You
you would pull and put in your
could
own
put it in
account?
the bank and have it ready to go to spend. You could make it more conservative. There are vehicles that have less risk. And then the money that is even 4 to 6 years out could be more aggressive, but you probably still don't want it to be overly aggressive. We know we need it, and every year we get closer. So that's kind of how I would structure it. But does that make kind of conceptually make sense? Because the way it works for retirement planning is there are three phases for your money, right? So right now, you and I, and probably all of our listeners, are in the accumulation phase of life, right? We're feeding our retirement. We're accumulating. So we're putting money in. And so how it looks has to reflect that we're in the feeding stage, right? We're dollar cost averaging. We're adding money. We're not taking. We can be really aggressive. Then not everyone hits this phase, but oftentimes there's a phase where we're not adding, but we're not pulling, right? That weird middle limbo position where it might just be sitting and we don't need it yet. And then we get to the distribution phase of life. And that's where the account turns around and it says, instead of you feeding me, I'm going to feed you, June. And I'm going to feed you, this is where it gets tricky, for potentially 30 to 40 years. That's why I like to use conservative numbers, because it depends on how long did you feed the account versus how long does it have to feed you. So if you're only going to feed your account for 25 years, think about that. If it's like a seesaw, how is it supposed to feed you for 40? That's not a really fair proportion, right? So you want to feed it for a comparable amount of time to how long you want to distribute, in my opinion. And when it, the account is feeding you in the distribution phase, which is your retirement phase, it needs to look and act different because it's serving and fulfilling a different purpose than it was when you were in accumulation, right? We have, those are the two main cycles of your money. If you hear when you listen to TikTok or YouTube or whatever, you don't hear a lot about the distribution phase of life, right? Everyone's giving you these really amazing projections. Like I've seen 12%. It looks like Elvis is using up to 10. And it is, those are all exactly what they are. They're projections, not guaranteed, not promised.
Yeah.
And you can project anything. And so what I'm saying is if we use a conservative number, the reason why your personal finance is so important is you need to reevaluate this yearly. Things are going to change in your life over 30 years. It is not guaranteed what's going to happen in the future. We don't know where you're going to be. We don't know the cost of things. And so everything is just a projection. But I like to use a more conservative number because you could always get to, let's just say, 55. And it did project out to be that higher number. You can just adjust things and say, okay, we're going to retire earlier. No one's ever upset about that. Like we have more than we need. We're comfortable. And so does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
The different phases.
I never actually thought about that. Yeah, that makes sense. I've never thought about the logistics of actually retiring before.
No one really thinks about it. It's just like this phantom thing in the future. And I do find the projections to be quite high often when I'm seeing things. And that's nice, but it's a little pie in the sky and no one's held accountable because the disclaimer is like, this is just merely a projection. So I like to use a lower number and make a happy medium. The retirement thing is so important to people who, in my opinion, hate what they do, right? Like if you wake up every day and you hate your life, yeah, then obviously getting to retirement is key. But if you're living the life that you love now, what's retirement going to do for you if you like what you do?
Right.
And that's the hard part. Like, that's the part I can't say, right? That's personal to you. But like, if you're writing and you enjoy it and you've built this oasis of a house where you have the pool and you still have the money to go on vacation, you might not want to retire. You might just want to say, I'm going to take a couple less contracts.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I like working.
Because the flip side of the retirement story that we don't, isn't talked about a lot is there are a lot of people that love what they do. And like, I've had people who are like, they're 80 years old in my office and I'm like, so we're going to retire? And it's like, well, maybe next year. Because it's like, if it doesn't impact your life negatively, like if you enjoy it and you have a role that you have impact and you like going in and you can still take your vacation, not everybody is gunning for this retirement date.
Right. Right.
So a lot of people are, but not everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being self-employed, you have so much control over your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not like fighting anything.
Right. If you're not waking up dreading the day, then I think the retirement conversation is a different conversation. I think it's more about building the life that you love, right? From your standpoint, being financially comfortable. And yeah, save for retirement. It's important. You want it to be there should you decide, I don't want to write anymore. But knowing what is enough is so individual. But it sounds like if you like what you do and you like where you live, right? Then you kind of will be building everything you need right now, right? To have a life that you love. And yeah, you're still planning for the future, but who knows? You might get to 69 and say, now I have the dream contracts. I'm actually have no desire to stop writing. Maybe you write. We've also seen people turn it on at 65. Like they finally found their passion and now, you never know.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Manisha has a really interesting book about what is enough, because I think that there's just so much conversation about like getting more, getting more, getting more. And I think it needs to be a happy medium between living a life that you love now and still protecting the future.
Yeah, I agree.
But it sounds like you're doing that.
It's kind of new for me, but it feels good and it's nice to be with someone who is financially stable and has made good decisions. I think like his 401k is in such a good place, and I wasn't always good about that, especially when I was like building up the business. I was not worried about, obviously mine is a third of what his is, and he's younger than me, but yeah, I feel like I'm on a good track now.
Yeah, you are on a good track because you can choose, like, I'm going to take another writing contract or I'm not going to. Like, his income is set, really, right? And you're 100% in charge. And it sounds like yours is so much about networking and you keep building your network every year after year.
He just started a side hustle as a realtor, which has been interesting. So I don't know how that's going to impact. We are like, we've pretty much lost money on it so far. It's been since December. But it's, I'm like, I've built a business. It takes a long time. But there was
Yes, it
just a
does.
ruling, a big settlement, that's going to
For that
affect
six,
realtors.
the 6% commission. Yeah.
So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. But the original thinking with that was that it could be a nice way for him to kind of offset the child support obligation and, bring more money to the table. Because with writing, it's like you are kind of limited in terms of, I only have so much bandwidth a day, but he, if he, if he gets a big listing, that's different. And so we are trying that this year, but who knows what will happen, especially with the court ruling.
Well, yeah, it definitely takes time to build a business, but as you know, there are a lot of write-offs with owning businesses. So from a tax standpoint, it's quite advantageous. But you just have to be willing to put the time with the time. It just takes time to build a business.
It's a lot for like people who haven't done it before, you know what I mean?
It
But
is a lot. I
yeah.
know. I really am a big I'm a big believer that it really takes 10 years to become an expert and for it to be really for it to look easy, I guess. And then people are like, oh wow, you're so lucky.
Yeah, all
And
the
you're like, yeah,
time.
I'm so lucky. I was willing to do work for 10 years that wasn't,
Like, in addition to like, I worked in healthcare, so it's like I'd have to work at a hospital all day and then come home and do stuff for free. And it's like, yeah, it
Correct.
wasn't
Correct. Most
looking back, I'm like,
people
that's outrageous.
aren't willing to do the work for free to get it going. And oftentimes it takes a lot. Like people will say about the podcast, like, oh wow, that's so incredible. Like it's you're so lucky or whatever. And it's like, well, it wasn't luck. It was every Saturday when everybody else was enjoying their free day, we would record six episodes and work from like 9 to whatever for free. I mean, we wanted to do it. I love doing the podcast. I love meeting the women. But yeah, I think the interesting thing about doing a business, and generally when you like dive a little deeper for people who like say it was their first business that got lucky, you find out like actually no, in high school they started this business, and then usually when you look back in their history, it wasn't, even if it was their first business that was a success, it was like there's all this history of them being in
It's like that
businesses.
Malcolm Gladwell like 10,000 hours
Yes,
thing, because
yes.
like that's what, yeah, it's like even like the Beatles, it's like they had so much like behind them by the time they were famous, and you always find that.
Yeah, it just takes time. But I always think I mean, it's good because like maybe then he ends up liking being a realtor and he transitions to that down the road. He has the time and is interested. To me, there's no downside in investigating those sort of things and giving it some time to stick.
I agree.
But yeah, I think that the biggest thing for you is getting the estate planning in place. I would just maybe consider a post-nuptial agreement just to make sure you're protected from on the house standpoint. And it doesn't, and remember with these sort of things, it like can be structured however you want. It can say like you have like a certain percentage in the house, like because he did the down payment and he bought it before you, but now you're contributing to the mortgage. So maybe you have a percentage of ownership based on that. I think sometimes people get hung up on it because it's like, well, it doesn't have to be down the middle. It doesn't have to be 50-50. You know, if he doesn't think that's fair, then you could say, okay, well, I have like 35% equity or 40% equity or whatever it is. You have some sort of protection for yourself.
Yeah.
To me, I think that's important.
I agree. It's like been on my mind, but I haven't, I guess, yeah, I haven't thought about it in a actionable way, but that makes sense.
I just see the horror stories, right? Like,
yeah.
People don't often like at a dinner table say like, I just got screwed by my spouse and I'm buying them out of a house they never contributed to, you know, like that's not like dinner conversation. So you don't hear a lot about that.
Yeah.
And so and from both sides, right? Like whether it's male or female, I just think that it's important to have these conversations and make sure either party is protected from a financial standpoint, because housing is one of your largest expenses generally. So it can be very disruptive financially if there's a problem with housing.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a house with my ex-fiance and we both were on it and it was a nightmare to
unravel. Yeah. So then that's the other thing. So maybe because it is a nightmare to unravel. So maybe then a post-nuptial agreement says something differently. Like he buys you out of the house without putting you on the house, but you have a contract stating that you're protected and that.
Yeah.
You're not starting at zero if there's a problem.
Right.
And that's why I do think it's worth the divorce attorney to do, get a post-nuptial just to make sure it's clear and you're covered. And then you literally put it in a draw and you hope you never need it.
Right. Yeah.
It's just like having life insurance. And at this point, from a life insurance standpoint, your husband probably needs it a bit more because he has the child support obligation to make sure that the kids are taken care of because he has a financial obligation. From your standpoint, you could maybe have some to cover each other, but I don't know. I think your husband would be fine without your income and you would probably be okay without his income. But these are things when you're doing the estate planning.
Yeah, he has it. We both have life insurance and then he gets it also through his work. And I think he has like some supplemental also
as well.
And then he has one on me. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So, and you have term.
I guess. I don't.
Check that.
Okay.
I very rarely take like a hard stance on things, but the one thing I have a hard stance on is I don't believe in spending money on life insurance when you have all these other goals. I think term is the cheapest type of insurance you can get, and it's for a set period of time when you're at risk the most.
Okay. Yeah, it's through his work, so I'll have him look.
Yeah, I would just verify that, but then yeah, if you have a little bit on each other, so God forbid someone predeceases the other, but this is stuff that you would talk, like, is part of the estate planning conversation of, like, what happens if one of us predeceases the other? But then I also think a post-nuptial agreement to make sure, mainly, you're protected should anything happen from a housing standpoint.
Right.
And it doesn't have to mean you go on the deed. It just means that, like, maybe you get a check to buy you out of your contributions. So you can do it however you want.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look into that.
Do you have any other questions?
I don't think so. I think that was illuminating. Because I mean, I've literally just been doing all of this myself. And then I met with a CPA like a year and a half ago. And I was like, I think I need a CPA. Like my business is growing. And I walked him through everything. And he was like, you're doing everything right. You don't need a CPA. And I was like, so I wanted some advice or someone to weigh in. And then I just kind of felt like, oh, okay. Like, are we all just, cause I mean, I'm like, even with the tax stuff, it's like, I just worked backwards to be like, I think this is what I'm supposed to pay. And then I never owed taxes. So I was like, okay, like we'll just keep it going. But yeah, there's like no manual that it's really complicated.
There's no manual. It's more complicated when you own a business because there's all the tax write-offs. So it's, I mean, I think that was smart to get a CPA to look it over to make sure you weren't missing something. Like you should be taking this and you're not. And the SEP, because not everyone knows about SEP, right? I'm a big, no employees. A SEP makes complete sense for you. Not everyone I've met business owners who are like, I'm doing a traditional IRA. And I'm like, oh, but you could do these other things. They just don't know, right?
Well,
Because
that was the thing. Like, he actually advised me to do the traditional IRA, and then I later was like researching, and I was like, wait, all the money that I've like invested, I could actually be writing it off. And so then it made like a huge difference on my taxes the next year. And I was like, I'm
well,
kind of annoyed.
you can put so much more into a SEP. So it's a dollar for dollar reduction on your income. So why would you do six when you could do 15? Yeah. No,
So
that
anyway,
would have been also remember that just like anything else in the world, not every CPA, not every CFP is going to be excellent, right? I hate to say that, but you also have a good intuition, right? Like obviously that wasn't the best advice that you received, in my opinion. So I would agree with you on that. And that's why referrals are important. Like if you know other business owners, right, and they say, I have someone who's excellent, we've gotten really good advice, to me, that's where I would start. Because yeah, sometimes not everybody is the best. Just like any, you can go to a doctor and not be impressed either, right? And they can make a mistake. Or a vet, you can go to the vet and not be impressed. So it's for all professionals. But yeah, I think your intuition was right on that one. I think it was smart to get a second opinion, but I think it sounds like you knew more.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, this was, I feel validated, and I feel like we're in a good place. So I feel good.
Yeah, I think you're doing great. Sometimes they're like a little more complicated, but it's refreshing to talk to someone who like has a business they built that they like. You know, like I think adding to your home when you have the low interest rate and making it what you want it to be, I think is a smart investment because you end up spending less money, right? Because you're not like wanting to go away and travel. If you love where you are and it has everything you want, then very cost efficient as well.
Exactly. I mean, I read something the other day that was like every house is a compromise. There was something, and I was like,
Okay.
that's totally it. Like, it's like, 'cause we were looking for houses, and it's like nothing is ever going to be 100% exactly what you want. And yeah, I was like, we, and then also just thinking of like when you're thinking of remodeling, you're thinking about like your resale. But I was like, we need to make it a house that we love. Like, we have to be here for 10 more years raising his daughter. So I'm like, I want to, yeah, it's like, this is about us. Like, it's not, and so I don't know, kind of getting rid of like some of the advice that you're given. And also a big thing that has helped me, I don't know if this will help anybody else, is like getting out of comparing. In Texas, everyone has these huge McMansions that are like 3,000 square feet. And I was feeling really bad about ours. We have like a 1,050, and we only have her part time, so most of the time it's just us. And then I was doing some reading on Reddit, and people were like, people lived in 1,000 square foot homes with families of like six people for years, and it was not an issue. And I was like, I was raised in military housing that was so tiny, and I'm like, I never felt, crowded. And so I think like just get being like, wait, why do I want these things? Like, it's, I don't actually need 1,000 square feet per person, but like, I feel like I should. I don't know.
And it's more work. The thing that like I think about too is like it's more work, right? It's more maintenance, it's more upkeep, it's more money, it's you have to clean more, right? Like if you have that much more, like it's more cleaning, or you have to then hire someone to clean all that extra space. So yeah, and that's what is enough is so different per person. Like I would agree with you, like we're gonna do a little bit of work on our house because we love it. And like I don't want to be taking care of a massive house. Like I also don't want the mortgage payment. So we're gonna like probably spend a little bit of money on this house because we like the location, we like our neighbor. There's all the things we like, right? And I'm a big believer nothing is perfect in life, right? So this is perfect for us. We'll make a little bit of changes and it's reasonable cost. And then what do they say? Comparison is the thief of joy, right? So I
It's
don't
true.
need a big house. Like I'm happy with my ranch, you know? And that's why, like, this is good enough for me. Like, this is enough for me and my husband. We're very happy. And what's good enough for somebody else is very different, right? That's why it's hard to have, like, that set number of, like, I need this, because what some people need is very different. Like, I have a set of clients that I've always been very impressed in. They live on $35,000 a year and are happy clams. Like, their vacations are biking. Like, they bike all over. They put all their stuff on their bicycle, which I'm like, I couldn't. Like, I have so many toiletries. Like, I just couldn't probably fit all my toilet. I don't know why I have so many toiletries. It's something I need to work on. If anyone knows how to reduce toiletries, please contact me. Every time I look at my toiletries, I'm just overwhelmed. I don't know why I have so many. But they put everything on their bike and they bike and they bike all over the world. And that's what they love to do. But that's like a pretty affordable vacation.
Yeah.
And they're really happy. And so I get asked this question all the time of like, what do I need for retirement? And I'm like, I need you to tell me what you need to be happy. That's the counter response. Like,
yeah.
What do you need to be happy? Do you need a $20,000 a year vacation to be happy? Or do you need $2,000 a year for a vacation? I don't know. I can't determine that for somebody. And that impacts how much you need for retirement is what do you need to be happy?
Well, thank you. I'm like excited now. I feel like I'm like excited about where we're at.
Yeah. Like you're happy.
Yeah. We're happy.
It's and you're financially good. Stable, which is great. Yeah. That's a lot more than most people, to be honest. A lot of people wake up and don't like to go to their job. Like are counting down. I've met people who have counting down the hours till they can.
Oh my God. Like
how much they hate it.
Multiple jobs in my past, like I had a like my quit, you know, 2 weeks notice letter in my just as trying to manifest that I could leave and like just
you
in my
drafted
drawer.
It before, yeah, just so you,
yeah, just like trying to get the energy to be like, I will, it will happen, you know, it's like dreadful,
yeah, and so when you're not in that place and you can afford the life that makes you happy. That's very, to me, that's a very powerful position to be in. And I agree. Part of that is not looking around and comparing yourself to other people, because just because you have the McMansion does not make you a happy person.
Yeah. I'm going to add that to my own newsletter themes to talk about, but yeah.
Okay.
Thank you
well,
so
thank
much.
You. Yeah. It was great to have you on. For all of our lovely listeners, you can follow us on Instagram for most up-to-date information. And if you like the show, please subscribe, and we are asking you to share it with your friends. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.